Good morning. This is Leading Age Maryland Tuesday Stand Up. Today, I'm delighted to introduce Stacy Young, who is the Director of Lifestyle and Dementia Programs at Broadmead. She is going to talk with us today about non-pharmacological approaches to managing behavior. Stacy will talk for about 15 minutes, and at the end, if you have questions, feel free to ask. During the call, I have muted all of your lines so that we don't have any static, but afterwards, you'll be free to ask questions. Take it away, Stacy.
Good morning, everybody. I'm pleased that you're joining us this morning to talk about non-pharmacologic approaches. I wanted to start out to talk a little bit about the assessment process, and then I have several case studies that I was going to share as a great way of sharing how to really look at your approaches with your residents with dementia. So in looking at your assessment, that's actually where I believe any great program for people with dementia, facing dementia, and their caregiver starts. And oftentimes, I'll have staff ask questions about why we have such a detailed assessment, why we have so many questions on our assessment, and how time-consuming, as we all know our days are very busy, how time-consuming a big assessment can be. However, I would urge a very strong assessment process because as your residents progress in their dementia, and as their families go through the stresses of dementia and the caregiving that's required for that, it can really start to become a challenge for knowing what that person likes and how to adapt for that as their dementia and the brain atrophy and the various challenges they face changes the way that they interact with their world. So when I say a detailed assessment, everything from asking questions about their history, as we know, with short-term memory impairment, our residents can often go back to their 20s or their 30s or their 40s. So asking questions even back to where did they live in those periods of time in their life will tell you a lot about what mindset they're in based on the challenges they're facing and the things that they're saying to you. Asking questions about who was their person of comfort at various stages in their life. Looking at patterns and routines when they were younger versus now. Looking at interests both past and present. I'll often have families tell me, oh, they can't do that anymore, and ask why I'm asking so many questions about specific interests or asking for more details even when they state that they haven't done it in many years. But again, if they're going back to a mindset of a previous point in their life, knowing all those historical things about what they once did are really important and sometimes can shape the way that they live their lives with us in our community. So really looking at things, for example, we had many years ago a resident that I cared for who had a spiritual background of being a Jehovah's Witness. And in caring for him and in doing the assessment up front, his wife had not deemed answering about spirituality for him as important because he had not actively practiced in 30-plus years. However, in our community, we noticed that he was becoming quite disturbed by being in social events or gatherings when they were happening on our community campus. Whether it be a birthday party or a holiday celebration, he would become very disruptive, he would become very aggressive and anxious, and really did not respond well to those. We thought at first it was just the overstimulation from having such a large group, but what we came to find out was, over time his wife had shared, you know, he was never one to celebrate. You know, we used to be Jehovah's Witnesses, and they don't believe in celebrating big things the way that others do. And we came to find out that that historical preference for him, though it wasn't important in recent years to him coming to live with us, was now shaping his experience with us. So we were able to escort him away from that and do other things to help lighten that load for him and help to alleviate some of those concerns. But even with the detailed assessment in that instance, his wife had just determined that she didn't see that as a value because it hadn't been of value in recent years. So I always urge families to tell us as much as they possibly can, past, present, and just their experiences with them throughout their life as much as they can. It's oftentimes great when you can capture a resident at the earlier stages to where they can really have a voice in that. We're a strong believer in our program here that the earlier that we can capture some of this information from our residents, especially when you're in a retirement community where you have that great fortune to possibly capture some of these interview processes with your residents at early stages, they can be a strong voice in managing their preferences. So that's really important. And not just lifestyle preferences. So I'm not sure who all I have on the call, but even from other points of view. So looking at care preferences, what were their typical bedtimes, wake times, meal times? Did they take naps? What are typical routines and patterns? You know, oftentimes we're challenged with behaviors that we see in our communities, but oftentimes it's because we're trying to get the residents to fit in the mold of what we think is the right pattern for them or what fits the patterns for what our staffing needs are or for what the opportunities we have available to us are. I'll give you as an example, we used to have a gentleman that we cared for who had been a truck driver. And two of the challenges we had with him is he would stay up all night and sleep all day. And the staff really wanted us from a lifestyle point of view to make sure that we were engaging him all day long so that we could change his sleep-wake schedule to make sure he was sleeping at night and up during the day. However, he didn't really want to go to group activities. He wasn't much of a group joiner. And come to find out from his past routines, he had been a truck driver for 40-plus years, driving overnight and being used to taking naps during the day at rest stops or various places like that. So it wasn't because of his dementia that that pattern had arrived. It was really because that had been his pattern all his life. I urge you all in thinking about how you care for persons with dementia. I've always been a firm believer in saying that 99% of all behaviors are not behaviors because someone has dementia. Oftentimes they're behaviors because that lack of communication that comes, that ability to communicate the way we once did and tell someone what might be happening for that person, that causes those behaviors. But usually it is not directly related to the dementia itself. It's usually related to the symptoms and the inability to communicate those needs that we once had. A good example is a baby cries when it needs to eat or sleep or needs to be changed. It's not unlike that for our residents when they sometimes can't communicate the concerns they're having, whether it be pain, whether it be that a preference is not being met and that that's very upsetting to them, or whether it be that they really desire something and we just are having a difficult time understanding what that need is. We almost have to become detectives. So in the example of my friend, that pattern was the case. Once we could educate the staff that this had been his long-standing pattern, and it was okay that he was up all night. He wasn't being disruptive. He wasn't coming out of the room disrupting others. He was really just, you know, following his typical routine he did his whole life. So we educated the staff that we needed to look at his care differently and say, you know, if we needed to provide a midnight snack to keep him well fed and even maybe a middle of the night snack, having his favorite movies available. And the one thing he loved was music by Beyonce. That's how he stayed up in his truck. And they said, well, we can't play that in the middle of the night, but what we could do is get him headphones where he could still continue to listen to that and not disrupt the others. And that was a great success for him. So knowing their patterns and routines and their preferences are really going to help us to better care for them and oftentimes can help us alleviate the challenges of using medicine first. So, for example, in that case, staff may have wanted to give him something to help him sleep better at night and, again, had wanted us to do some non-pharmacologic during the day. But that approach just wasn't going to work for him. Another example of a challenging case that I saw was somebody with frontotemporal dementia. Oftentimes what we see with frontotemporal dementia is that lack of impulse control and that lack of structure. They often benefit from what I say is a smaller daily dose of activities. So, for example, we hear sometimes it's better for us to eat 6 meals a day. I often say with somebody with frontotemporal dementia, you may find that you need to provide a variety of different types of programs throughout the day to keep them involved. Where you're going to have behavior challenges or overstimulation is when we try to force them again into the structure of our routines and our calendar. So we had a gentleman that we cared for that we found that if we tried to have him come to every activity all day long, he became very overwhelmed. He would start to hit others. He would start to strike out. He would become visibly upset. However, if we allowed him the freedom to wander in and out of our programs and documented for him activities in a different way, he was really successful. And we had things all around in various areas of the community for him to interact with when he didn't want to be in those group activities. For example, we found he did great with the Wii, so we left that in one area. He loved ESPN Sports, so they made sure that they kept that on in his room, and he would oftentimes go back to his room to rest in between programs and do that. In another area, we had an iPod that staff had set him up with because he loved old commercial jingles. Once we were able to provide those smaller activities in a variety of spaces for him in smaller amounts, he was really successful. But when we were trying to make him stay in activities all day long for long periods of time, he really wasn't successful. So I always call that the small daily doses. Every resident has a threshold for what they can tolerate, and I often say it's more about matching lifestyle preferences than it is about having activities for activity's sake. So if you match their daily routines and preferences in the structure they desire, that's where somebody with dementia is going to be most successful, rather than, again, shaping it based on our routines, our schedules, and what we think is the best thing there. Looking at honoring their voice, oftentimes people will say to me, well, how do we know what they're trying to do, or how do we know if they don't have that verbalization anymore, or they don't have the words as they once did? Oftentimes, it's knowing that they've been heard. So trying to mirror what they've said to you and mirroring it back to try to help be a detective and determine what they're looking for oftentimes will go a long way. For example, we have a resident that says she wants to go a lot, but we're not sure where because the only language she can carry out is, I want to go. So we will say that you want to go. Where do you want to go? And she'll point. And instead of saying, well, we can't go there, we'll take her for a walk and see if she can show us. And oftentimes it's just that she wants to get away from where she's sitting. She's been sitting there for a long period of time. She's looking for something that makes sense. Oftentimes what we see challenging for the people facing dementia is they want to go to some place that makes sense. And your community doesn't make sense because that's not the place that they remember best. That's oftentimes why having the room decorated with some of their favorite things that are of comfort to them is a great place to start. For residents that sometimes feel that way or say they want to go, I'll try to take them to their room to where they have those items of comfort and start to redirect in that way. At the end of the day, it's really about knowing preferences, knowing about what they like, what their past routines and preferences are really going to help you to shape their day. And again, molding to their preferences in that person-centered way versus trying to mold them into our assessment process and what we think is best because our calendar has to have activities at that time. The dining room is only open at a certain time. And I recognize the challenges with staffing. We all face that. But what I often say is we often make more work for ourselves by trying to match them to our routines versus the routines they need. So oftentimes, even when staffing is a challenge, if we're able to match their preferences, we can do things a lot better for them and a lot better for us. So the final story I wanted to tell you was the story of a red balloon. I oftentimes hear from staff that see what our lifestyle department's doing or what programs are going on. They'll say, you guys try some of the craziest things, and it works. So I had a lady that I took care of, and we would try to get her for activities. It was very important to her family for her to go to activities, but she would often say to us, no. No matter what we asked, no matter how we asked it, no matter how many different ways we asked it and who came in to ask, she would say no. And oftentimes she would say, that's stupid. I don't want to go to it. That's stupid. Even with activities she always loved. What we started to find was her lack of verbal ability started to really challenge her, and she was very aware of it. And she would cover by saying that's stupid because she didn't really want to have people know that she was having those challenges. Well, one day our music therapist went in with a red balloon for a program that she was going to be doing. And the resident was so engaged with that red balloon. It had nothing to do with music therapist. It had nothing to do with the program that was going on. But for whatever reason, that red balloon captured her interest. So she was able to get her for that program that day. The next day, she went in with no red balloon, no balloon at all, and she wouldn't come. So she thought, I'm going to try this again to see if that's it. But she grabbed whatever balloon she had available. I think it was a blue balloon. and the resident wouldn't come with her that day. So one more time on a Friday, she tried with a red balloon again, and that resident went. It's out of the box. We still to this day don't know why it worked. Maybe her favorite birthday featured a red balloon when she was a child. But for 6 months, we were able to get that resident to come to programs and to feel engaged with that red balloon. And so sometimes it's trying things outside of the box, really knowing who your residents are and really matching their preferences to their day that, in my opinion, can really help you overcome some of the tackling pharmacological challenges first instead of doing it that way, really trying to figure out the resident and how you can best meet their needs in other ways. So I thank you. And any questions?
Thank you so much, Stacy. Does anyone have any questions? Your lines are now unmuted. Okay, well, thank you so much for listening to Leading Age Maryland Tuesday Stand Up. The call has been recorded, so if you want to refer back to anything that you've heard today, you can find it on our website under Tuesday Stand Up. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you.